Remember, in the course of discussing movies, the host will spoil plots. You've been warned. Listen to their screams.
And welcome to Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. I am one of your friends, Dave. We're joined, as always, by our other friend, Ike. And today we have two more friends with us. We have Paul A. Brooks and Sierra Renfro, the writers of Hunting for the Hag. Guys, how are you?
Hey, good.
I'm great.
Good.
How are you guys?
We're good. We're glad to be talking to you. This is going to be fun. Let's start off. Talk to us about how the idea for Hunting with the Hag developed.
Like a lot of other people, we sort of got frustrated with some stuff from COVID. We had been planning on shooting something summer of 2020, and obviously all of that fell apart. And then once we kind of got on the other side of it, we said, let's make sure that we, you know, shoot a feature, because everyone was feeling a little bit creatively frustrated. So Sierra and I wrote the script for the film, and really just kind of knocked it out over a couple of months. We started writing it end of April, early May, and we were shooting the movie by August. So it was a pretty fast pre-production period. And we just wanted to get something out there and kind of, you know, shoot something fast and dirty and make sure that we didn't let another summer slip by.
Absolutely. Well, we'll go ahead and jump on here because we've actually talked to a couple of people who've also done found footage films. And something we always like to ask is, did you know you wanted to do a found footage film, or did that format come after the idea of the plot?
What do you think, Sierra? That's a good question.
I feel like it was going to be found footage from the beginning because we knew that we had to work with minimal resources, and that includes money. So it was a lot more doable in our budget, I think. But also we just, you know, we like witches and we like, you know, Blair Witch vibe, and it just kind of like everything seemed to make sense going in that direction.
Yeah, I think you know, found footage tends to be more forgiving. You can make mistakes and just blame it on the characters in the film rather than you making a mistake. And we knew that if we were going to be shooting something quickly, which was definitely the case with this movie, that is kind of a subgenre that's going to allow you to do that a little bit more easily. And yeah, I know that you guys have talked with, you know, you had your Frogman review, and we talked with Anthony about some of this stuff, and, you know, chatted with him and Becca at the festival that we were at earlier this year, and really kind of connected with them on the found footage sort of aspect of things. So it's a lot of fun, but it can actually also be frustrating in some aspects because you have to think about the filmmaking process in a slightly different way and kind of map it out a little bit more. So I went into it thinking that it was going to be a lot easier than it actually was. There were lots of challenging aspects of creating that type of film and making sure that it works the way you want it to.
Yeah.
I tell everybody, notoriously, I don't like found footage films. I haven't in the past. But there's several, your movie included, who is starting to turn me around recently. And that's because I always, in the past, I always found that found footage just seemed like an easy out for people. And they didn't utilize found footage to enhance the film or the story. Does that make sense? It was an easy way. But it, like you talked about the mistakes, right? I mean, as a filmmaker, as an actress, as a writer, those mistakes can actually add to the plot, add to the movie, right? You can utilize mistakes to add to what you're telling.
Yeah, definitely. And something that Ike said when you guys reviewed the film that I thought was really interesting, because there's been a little bit of controversy about something we did in the movie where I don't want to get too deep into spoilers, but we make a choice at some point that takes it out of found footage. And there's some kind of found footage diehards that really didn't care for that choice, as if it was like a cheap way out, which I found really surprising because I was we were kind of nervous to do that, you know. We thought it was kind of a risky thing, and I appreciated the fact that you guys thought that, you know, there were some twists and turns that you didn't see coming, and it went in some directions that you didn't anticipate. And when I watch a movie, you know, that's what I want to see too. I always want to be surprised by stuff. So I really appreciated some of the stuff that you guys said in the review.
Yeah,
Well,
and it's here. Oh,
go
go ahead,
ahead.
Ike. Go ahead, Ike. No, I was
Well,
just going.
I was actually going to ask because it was interesting because you brought up the fact that you guys kind of you were in found footage mode and then it was like out of found footage mode. But I meant to mention this during our review, but I wanted to also add, I thought it was really cool because it was like a plot device in a way because there was some scrutiny by the law enforcement in the film as to like what actually had happened. And there was sort of that gap of, you know, hey, we caught this much on camera, but then like there's all these deaths that happened off camera. So that's why, you know, the pseudo law enforcement was like, you know, hey, yeah, this is kind of sketchy that like you have some deaths here. We didn't really see this. So I thought that was super unique. And if any found footage diehard would be super happy that you didn't just leave a plot hole. You made it make sense, at least in my opinion.
Thank you. Appreciate
I have,
that.
yeah, I want to add to that because that talking about how you can use like mistakes to your advantage, like that's actually something that happened with the intro and the ending. Those scenes with Dan Roebuck, they weren't originally in the script. Paul was reviewing everything and he said that we were short on time, the runtime of the movie. And so it kind of had panic mode of, what are we going to do so that we can add length? But like everybody flew back to LA who had flown out to Illinois to film. So those two scenes, we just like thought about creatively after the fact and shot it after the fact. And I don't think the movie would have been as good without it because it just felt like it wrapped it up like in the most perfect way. So yeah, that was a mistake, but it turned out to be really great because then also we had Dan Roebuck. So sometimes it can just, you know, go your
Work out
way.
that way.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Sierra, you have several acting credits, but if unless I miss them, this is your first writing credit. Is that correct?
Yeah. First official writing credit. I had written shorts and like done some little side projects like with Paul before, but nothing that ever went anywhere really. So this was the first time that I got to be a part of the process from the actual beginning idea, pre-production, all the way to the end post-production. And that was a really cool thing to see, especially as just have been an actor all these years, you know?
Yeah.
So.
So was that always a goal of yours, is to explore that side also of filmmaking outside of just the acting part?
Yeah, 100%. I was getting kind of frustrated as an actor. Like you're trying to get, you know, roles, but like you get handed a script and it's kind of shit. And you're like, I'm stressing out trying to compete with a million other people for a script that I'm like rolling my eyes at. Like I could write it better, like I knew I could. And then not getting the role in the end. So like that like really fucks with your head. And it made me really frustrated, and I like to have creative control, and I like to be big picture with things. So, I kind of like switched during COVID. I kind of like my brain kind of switched to, well, if I'm gonna act in things that I write in, things that I direct in, or my friends write or direct, and that's gonna allow me to have more of a fun experience all around. Like I'd rather build something, you know, than just kind of be a puzzle piece to everybody else's things. So yeah, it's been really great so far.
That's awesome. Well, and you know, and obviously you jumping into the whole writing process, you know, it's weird because sometimes, you know, when you look at movies and you look at credits, you see one writer, two writers. Is there a difference between writing individually and writing together, or what's the process like with them?
For me, I always like having a writing partner because I it's probably the least fun part of the entire process for me. I have a tendency to get stuck in my own head and I just want it to be done. And you start writing, you come up with your first draft. It's always going to be crap, and it's easier to have someone to bounce ideas off of so that you don't get trapped in that same way. And Sierra and I think work really well together because we come from, we have different experiences. She obviously is able to bring a lot to the table in terms of writing for female characters. And so it was really great going back and forth with scenes on this movie. We basically just kind of split it up and then if there was anything that we needed to tweak a little bit, we would get together and do that. But for us, it's usually a pretty stress-free and easy process. I hope you agree with that, Sarah.
No, 100%. I think the balance that was really helpful was you've had experience writing and directing previously. So when you're writing a script, you have that knowledge to kind of just support and back it up. And I didn't really have that side. But I did have the, just female experience and knowing how girls talk when boys aren't even around. And I think that was a really good dynamic for us, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be really cool in the future because we're going to keep doing this. So,
Yeah, we're writing again on Sunday, so stay
there
tuned.
you go. All right. Well, and I think you mentioned it earlier. How long did you say it took you to write the script and then and be ready to film?
Well, I mean, we started writing in May and we were shooting in August, so I mean, 2.5 months total. We were writing up until maybe a week before we started shooting, and I don't recommend that. I think we went a little too fast on everything. We're going to try to slow down the process a little bit next time. But it was just kind of the nature, we wanted to make sure that we got something shot in the summertime, and we just kind of banged it out. And yeah, it was pretty quick. And hopefully, we can take a little more time next time to make sure that we just have more time to sort of digest things and sort of. It's a process coming up with characters and all that.
I don't even think we touched on it. How did you two meet?
Sierra, tell the story.
It was a decade ago.
Yes, it was,
Jesus,
yeah.
yeah, it was like 10 years ago. I had just moved to LA, and I think Paul had just moved to LA too. We were fairly new still, and we had both known somebody who was a part of a movie documentary called Showrunners, and they were having their premiere at the Egyptian Theater. So that was like, I think maybe like my first night like living in Hollywood, and I was there and I had no friends or anybody I knew besides that one person who was going around talking to everybody else. And I was really awkward, and I just saw somebody else in the corner, aka Paul, probably going through the same experience because we're both kind of looked at each other and then just like walked over. And I was like, hi, I'm pretty sure I said something along the lines of just like, I feel super awkward right now. I don't know who to talk to. What's up? And he was like, great, me neither. What's up? And we just kind of stayed friends ever since. So.
Strange because that's not something that happens. Normally you get introduced by somebody else, or there's some sort of a more natural process, but it was just one of those very serendipitous situations where it was strange. And the fact that it was at the Egyptian theater, where like the first ever movie premiere ever took place is just kind of cool to me. So I treasure that.
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Like you said, it's almost meant to be.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Well, we talked a lot about writing, and obviously writing's an integral part to, not just the creation of film, but the creation of anything. But Paul, you've also directed a few shorts. From the director's perspective and the fact that it looks like you've mostly worked on shorts, was this your first attempt at a feature-length film?
No. I don't know if I want to talk too much about what my first attempt was. I tried to I actually shot about 30, maybe 40% of a feature in like 2012 when I was living in Chicago. And I won't get too deep into it, but it fell apart, which is just a devastating experience, you know, to go through as a writer and a director to have something like that happen. And I was pretty depressed about it for a while. And so after that is sort of when I did some shorts. But I'm a feature guy, you know, I've always wanted to make a feature. Obviously shorts are easier to do because it doesn't require as much time and money and all that. But I always wanted to make the feature. So the fact that we were able to do Hunting for the Hag was, you know, a culmination for me of 15 years really of trying to make that happen and having failed at it before and really feeling when we were gearing up to shoot it, like, all right, when is something going to go wrong? When are the wheels going to come off of this thing? And it didn't happen. And we got done with the shoot. I'm like, oh my God, like, we're actually going to get a feature in the can here. So that was a pretty amazing experience to finally, you know, say that I have directed a feature film.
Well, it's yeah, you guys Paul said that you guys started shooting, I think, in August of the year you wrote it. Where did you shoot the film? And then how long did it take you to shoot it?
Yeah, we shot it in Central Illinois,
Okay.
in Pontiac
Yeah.
and Fairbury.
Can you tell that she's not from the
Yeah,
Midwest?
it sounds like it.
Yeah, so we shot it out there. Me and the other two girls, we flew in, and Aaliyah, makeup artist, we flew in from LA to Chicago, and then Seth, the executive producer, drove us down to the
Funny,
Fairbury house.
Fairbury, sorry, yes.
Fairbury. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of cornfields and gas stations. So, but yeah, so we filmed out there. And it was really nice. I liked it. It was very humid and there's a lot of
It is.
cicadas. And, but I don't know, I get nostalgic about it a lot because that's like the first time I experienced weather like that and like those Midwest vibes. So it felt like that mixed with like making a film, like felt like summer camp because we filmed it in like what, like 7 or 10 days or something. So it was like literally
Six and a
the
half.
It was like literally the length of like a summer camp, and it felt like it. We were covered in dirt and there's bugs everywhere and we were sweating and yeah.
So, where are you originally from then, Sierra?
Oh, I'm from California. So I was born
Okay,
in Los
okay, okay, okay. So,
lived in San Diego, and then yeah, now I'm in LA.
the Midwest is a little different.
A little different, yeah. My family moved to Missouri though, so I go back
There
every
you
once
go.
and
Yes, yeah.
get my fix. So
All
yeah, the
right.
Midwest is a lot different than the West Coast. We talked a little bit before I think everybody got on, but Dave and I are both from Indiana originally. I live in Florida now and he lives in North Carolina, but yeah, the Midwest is a different beast. A lot of corn and not a whole lot else, so but in any case, how did you guys premiere the movie? You know, we talk a lot about the creative process and how you get from point A to point B, but I think one of the biggest things about a movie is how do you premiere? You know, what was that process like? You know, what kind of film festivals did you guys do?
We didn't really do too many festivals. We played a couple that we got invited to. Me and Sierra went out to Philadelphia in September of last year. And that was really cool. And then I mentioned to you guys, or I said earlier that we were in San Francisco earlier this year for Unnamed Footage Festival, which is sort of like one of the biggest found footage festivals, screen life, in camera stuff. Really, really cool. We had a great time at that. But we actually premiered the movie here in my hometown of Normal, which is about 35 minutes south of Pontiac, where we filmed. And I don't know, we wanted to do something fun. We wanted to do something special. Normal is a great place to be from. I enjoy living here. We have a theater here called the Normal Theater. So we actually premiered it here in Normal at the Normal Theater and had a huge turnout. It was like, there was like 275 people that came out to check out the movie for the first time. And it was honestly kind of one of those perfect nights. I again was just expecting something to go wrong at some point, and everything was essentially perfect. Sierra came out for it. Jasmine and Alexa came out for it. Aaliyah, like, you know, our cast members from LA came out, and it was just a great, great experience. And then afterwards, Sierra did karaoke at the gay bar.
Natural.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have a go-to?
That is the natural conclusion there.
Me and Aaliyah went out. The only two partiers of the group, me and Aaliyah.
Do you have a go-to song, Sierra?
Yeah, I do. Why can't I think of the name?
I wasn't there. I was in bed, so I don't know.
Oh my God. I just saw them in concert too.
Grateful Dead.
No,
it's your hat.
I'm brain farting so bad right now.
It's okay.
Give
Pink
me
Floyd.
I don't, no. I mean, we'll circle back around.
Give me five seconds.
Here, can I tell you my go-to?
Oh, sure.
I used to do this at Porn Star Karaoke in Burbank, which we never went to, Sierra. And I'm sad that that's not around anymore. But I used to do Tequila by the Champs, because all you have to do is say tequila three times and you're good to
go.
There
you go. Okay.
And all it always killed at Porn Star Karaoke.
All right. I found it. I don't know why I'm stumbling. I do Add It Up by Violent Femmes. So
it's a
chaotic song. I like to throw my shoes off and just get real weird with it. And that was the perfect place to do it.
Nice.
There you go. Well, I mentioned earlier that I've always had a little problem with found footage films, right? And don't take it personally. But one thing that has always bothered me about a lot of found footage films is they don't have character development, right? They lose some of that in the format. You guys, I found, you had really great character development. And you were really invested in these characters. And do you find, though, as an actress, as a filmmaker, is it more difficult, though, to have that character development in a found footage type film? Does it provide limitations to try to accomplish that?
I would say yes, in a sense, because you have to do a certain amount of setup with a found footage movie in order to get to the gnarly stuff, you know? So I was I'm glad you asked this question, because I think that that's something that when we were writing it, that we were trying to be aware of. We wanted the characters to have arcs, and to make sure that there's some sort of growth along the way. And I think you get that the most with, Tara, who's, you know, really the protagonist of the film. But you also want to make sure that things feel realistic. That's sort of like the number one goal with a found footage movie. And, you know, in real life, people don't always have arcs. People don't always have, you know, a ton of development. So I kind of feel like it was splitting the difference between those two, of making it feel like these three girls are friends and they like hanging out with each other, while also giving them some sort of, especially with Tara, you know, some sort of arc where by the end of the film, she's in a much different place than where she is when she begins the journey.
Yeah, I'd say that I'd actually say kind of no, because I feel like if it's a found footage film, it's usually like or something kind of wacky's going on. So I feel like by nature, the stakes are high. Uh-huh. And when the stakes are high, like, that's when you're going to see people's true sides and characters come out. I also think with found footage, there's a certain like intimacy that you get with it, because it's like the character is holding the camera and the camera is a part of the scene. It is not, you're not just like a fly on the wall watching like someone's life, you know? So it feels a lot more like raw and intimate in those moments where the stakes get really high and emotions get really high. So in a sense, just knowing where the story was going from point A to B, it's like we knew that there was going to be a lot of those moments and opportunities. And for me, it felt kind of natural to just like, what would the character do in this situation? What would any person do in this situation? It felt like it was easier to write, but
Yeah, see, but I feel that the difference there is, like you said, you thought, you approached about the character. I just find some reason for found footage, sometimes I feel like the characters are so interchangeable, right? You don't know who's who. They don't have a lot of purpose. But right from the get-go with Hunting for the Hag, like the three girls, right? You each had a distinct purpose for going on this trip, right? There was the girl, making the documentary, the one girl who was the actual avid believer and the hag, and then you, who just, as you said, you were there for the free beer. And yeah, so you each had a purpose for being there, which helped it, the story develop. And you didn't feel, they did, the characters didn't feel interchangeable at all. And I think sometimes that gets, I don't know, it's always, for me at least, got lost in found footage is.
I totally agree. I think that that's as someone who watches a decent amount of found footage myself, and just I think horror movies in general have been having some issues with that, more so lately. But I think you're right, Dave, that like found footage for whatever reason seems to have that problem more so than other subgenres. So yeah, I think it was, we just wanted to make sure, because this is a big thing with me, that people liked the characters. Because if you don't like the people who are on screen, you're just not gonna really feel invested in them. And so, I knew all three of the girls prior to shooting the movie. None of them knew each other, but I thought that all of them would have good chemistry together, and they all hit it off really quickly the day before. Or I guess, did you meet the day that you flew out,
We
Sierra?
met at the airport, yeah. And one of
Yeah.
our flights that day was like one of the most terrifying flights I've ever had in my life. I thought I was gonna die. So like we kind of all trauma bonded immediately too. So
Yep.
that really helped, get us
Yep.
close the first day. And then when we got to Fairbury, we like because there's not like very many like Airbnbs like out there. So like the one Airbnb that they had that would like fit us was like an old mansion that like has a bunch of history and stuff. Like you can read about the history of the people who live there. And like the furniture in there looks like original furniture, like the bedposts and everything. So we're like, oh shit, this is for sure haunted 100%. So when we got there, we were all nervous to sleep in separate beds. We were so sleep deprived. So we actually all three of us shared the master bed like the first night. So yeah, we had a lot of moments to get close with each other before we actually started filming.
I love that. Probably should have done some ghost hunting. That would have been cool. Throw that in the
We
movie.
did actually.
It did.
Did you?
Yeah.
The basement was super creepy, and we see, we have another ghost. We have a ghost hunting show. That's the project that we're working on right now, where Sierra and three other ladies are ghost hunting. We shot a couple new episodes last year, and I'm putting all that together right now. And so we were like, oh, we got to do some ghost hunting while we're in this creepy basement. So I have like a half hour of footage of Sierra down in this basement, and who knows if it'll ever see the light of day, but what it we got to find a home for it somewhere.
I think I got drunk and was trying to act like Zach Bagans,
Yeah.
so you can only imagine how entertaining that.
Maybe it's best if I just keep that footage to myself.
Did you hit him with the iconic line that "and we want answers"?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Classic.
See, that's a guilty pleasure. I love Ghost Adventures, love Zach Bagans, even though it's not 100% scripted for the most part, I'm sure.
Well,
Too.
Sierra
I'm
actually
a
did
huge
some
fan as well.
hunting. Yeah, Sierra did some hunting with him in Las Vegas, actually.
Yeah, I was at his museum and I paid for like the night tour, which is like really fucking bonkers if you like haunted stuff. Like, it's very fun. And I was just like, he's never there, but like I turned around and like this dark hallway, he's just standing there. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, you're Zach. And he's like, yeah, I heard the voices calling me earlier today. I need to go to the basement. And I was like, I'll go to the basement with you. He's like, let's go. And then I found myself in like a pentagram circle in the basement, an Aleister Crowley, like an actual Aleister Crowley vocal track of him doing a spell is blasting on the speakers. And like
Whoa.
Zach is like saying, use our energy to manifest yourself right now. And I was like, oh fuck, like wait. I think he's gone off the deep end and I think he's selling my soul for me right now. It was a little nerve-wracking, but I'm here, I'm fine, and makes for a great story. So
I was gonna say,
And by the
I
way,
really hope someone got that on film. That sounds unhinged.
did you get a picture with them?
Yeah, I did. It's on my Instagram. I can send it to you guys after. You guys want to see it?
And
That's
by the way,
amazing.
I just want to mention, I know that we're not here to talk about Ghost Girls, but we do not script anything on Ghost Girls. I'm very adamant about this, that when we do ghost hunting, I do not want to, be making up any bullshit. So if you are interested in checking out Ghost Girls, we have one episode that's up right now on Tubi. And we got, like I said, two new episodes that I'm working on right now that'll hopefully be out very soon. So anything that you see on our show is not scripted.
Well,
Well, I'll be the first to
sounds like if Sierra wanders into situations like, hey, you don't have to script anything. She just
just comes naturally.
that's right. Just follow her around. It the story tells itself.
Yeah.
So just for my recollection here, because I absolutely fucking love Tubi. You said it's called Ghost Girls on
Ghost Girls,
Tubi?
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you search for that, it should be the first thing that pops up. You'll see Sierra and our three other ghost girls standing in a hotel that we investigated on the first episode. And yeah, it's we have a lot of fun doing it. So if that's the sort of thing that you or any of your viewers are interested in, go check it out. Usually there's a pretty big crossover between like horror movies and paranormal stuff and wrestling,
Oh yeah.
all the
Well,
same shit.
that's
I
right.
was you say that, but right behind Dave right there is he's a huge wrestling guy. He has a whole wrestling podcast. He's like part of like clubs and stuff, so it's weird that you say wrestling.
No, well, I knew that. That's why I said
Did you?
that. Yeah.
I would say if you didn't know that, that is the biggest piece of irony, because you've never met a bigger wrestling fan than Dave Dynasty. So
All really likes wrestling too. I was homeless for like a week. No, just kidding, for like 3 months, sorry. Like it wasn't a week. And I was staying on his couch, and it was like the only two things that like he made me do. He's like, while you're here, like you have to watch wrestling with me, and we have to eat Taco Bell. I'm like, okay.
I
Deal.
don't remember that, but it
Yeah.
sounds like me.
Yeah.
So again, for my notes, if I'm ever in the same state as Paul Brooks, I can stay with him as long as I watch wrestling and eat Taco Bell with him. That's what I'm
Dude,
getting from this.
show up at his door with Taco Bell and you're good.
Hundred percent. Come on over.
Sweet. All right. Well, with this train's gone way off the rails. We're talking about, meeting Zach Bagans in a dark hallway and then doing a summoning ritual in his basement to go into Paul Brooks' house. So
That's what we like. Off the rails is good.
that's
Yeah.
right. If you ever listen to our podcast, that's we do that all the time. We're
It's
off the
all off the
rails.
rails. Yeah.
I get rambling about something. He gets rambling about something. But so we mentioned a little bit at the kind of start of all this. When you start watching this movie, right, you kind of anticipate it to be just a straight up, let's go find the hag. The hag comes out, a couple people die, we call it a wrap. The three characters go searching for the hag, of course, and you think something's going to happen. Something does happen, but not exactly what you think is going to happen. But then you pull a huge swerve in the story, shifted the focus to an abduction story, you know, something akin to something out of Wrong Turn almost. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, boom, 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 and then eventually circle back. But was that always the idea that you were going to do this huge swerve just in the middle of the movie and be like, hey, actually, we're doing this, and then go back? Like, what was writing that like?
Yeah, I don't know if you have anything to say about this, that, Sierra, but I think the initial sort of the first little light bulb moment that I had was I was watching Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs, and they were playing a movie called Mother's Day, which has another one of those kind of big turns right at the end of the film. And I just started thinking like, oh, you know, it'd be interesting to do something like that twist right there, but kind of, you know, do it more simplistically, maybe do a found footage thing and sort of like, you know, do a cryptid witch thing. I don't know. Like the gears just started turning. To be honest, I don't quite remember. I mean, I am a big Wrong Turn fan. I have all the Wrong Turn movies here. So maybe there was some subconscious influence there, but I don't really remember exactly how we ended up going down that road. Again, everything kind of happened pretty quickly. So I think we just started brainstorming and jotting down ideas, and that kind of spilled out somehow.
I mean, Paul really brought the idea to me, like the concept. So he was the original mastermind of it.
I wrote like an outline of it.
Yeah. But just knowing Paul and like knowing how he writes, and because I've written just for fun with him before, this guy loves a twist on a twist. Like he loves, like it's kind of like his thing. So that and catchy titles, catchy short titles. That's just Paul. But also, I think what I really liked about it was, you know, like for girls, like what's more scary than just men who just want to fuck with them? You know, it's like the idea of like making like the most stressful parts of the movie just about some dudes who just want to fuck with some girls is like, I feel like more relatable than a witch, because I don't know how many people actually get pulled apart by witches. But so I really liked that, like bringing in that element into it, especially because it was cryptid and stuff like that. So kind of grounded it, I felt like.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or go ahead. I was going to say, I don't know how much you guys are on TikTok, but the whole bear versus man thing is huge right now. So when I watched this, I was like, this is the personification of like bear versus man. And I mean, it's exactly what you're thinking. It's just like, I'd almost prefer the hag.
That's what is that? What is that? I'm not on TikTok. What does that mean?
It's like, one, or go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
This one girl like was basically like, hey, if you were out in the woods, like, would you rather be stuck out in the woods with a man or a bear? And like a bunch, it went viral, and a bunch of women were like, bear, I'll take the bear. And like, and then a bunch of people got really upset and mad, and because they're like, bear attacks are serious or something. Like,
no, listen, I have been in certain parts of rural America where I, as a, you know, guy with a beard who fits right in those parts of the country, was feeling pretty uncomfortable. So I have almost a hard time imagining what it must be like for a lady, or certainly a lady of color, to be a little bit outside, even a little bit outside of her comfort zone, and have to worry about such things. So yeah, I think, like Sierra said, it does ground it, and it's certainly more realistic. And so maybe that's part of what some people have responded to, is the fact that, you know, it could actually pretty easily happen if you venture into the wrong area somewhere.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because you talked earlier about Sierra, you bringing the female voice, and the one character, the one dude, was fixated on your character because he had seen her that whatever at some point in the club or whatever it was. And then it was just so simple, yet so terrifying in how simple it was. When it's like, it came up how they found you guys is, oh, because you checked in on Instagram. And yeah. it a simple post, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know, that's all it takes. And I'm like, that is the true terror. That, forget the hag. That is the truly terrifying part of this film, is, you know, is these guys and how disgusting they were.
Yeah, definitely. And like, even after they reveal that, I think like Jasmine or Tara turns to me and is like, Candy, like, what the hell? And I say, sorry. Which is like, again,
yeah.
like, it's not my fault. Like, I just
yep, right. Yep.
But here it is. The girl's always just taking the fucking fall and the blame. Like, what were you wearing? What did you do to deserve it? Oh, well, you posted a picture, so obviously you wanted to get kidnapped. Like, so it's
Yeah.
little things like that, and the dialogue that I think might pass some people by, but I think, you know, some people might, like, I don't know, like, hear it and know exactly why I wrote it that way. So,
and by the way, just from a behind the scenes perspective, that was one of the worst days of my life, having to shoot some of those scenes with one of my best friends and having to say things that I did not want to say as that character.
Yeah.
And you know, like that, and that was the last thing that we shot, so it was like everyone was tired, everyone was, you know, kind of on the verge. It had been a fun but very tiring shoot, and then to get to a lot of that stuff that Sierra had written to make sure that it, she, you know, she wanted it to feel as sort of authentic as possible. And I'm like, I don't want to say this stuff, but it's like, well, this is what I signed up for, so here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, after all the the misdirections and the switch around of these guys, a little spoilers, I almost think the hag's the hero of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some stuff that happens. When we had the premiere here in Normal, the biggest cheer of the night was something the hag does at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I won't spoil it just in case you haven't seen the movie, but
yeah,
we usually get some, you know, some nice clapping and everything. So it's nice that she's kind of maybe a little bit of an anti-hero.
Yeah, I agree.
That's kind of what we were, that's the same thought process we had too, is when we were talking about it, is, you know, Hag isn't the villain of the story, I don't think.
Right.
But, well, one thing you guys mentioned, which was actually a really cool fact that, you know, Sierra brought up, was that, you know, Daniel Roebuck, you know, was kind of like that throw in for the beginning and the end that wasn't originally part of the plan. And obviously Daniel Roebuck is known for a lot of shit. He's done a lot. Mm-hmm. What was it like working with him?
Danny is great. I've known him for probably 15 years. We had done a short together years back, and then we did some work together in LA. And yeah, we kind of, you know, we're Sierra and me and our executive producer, Seth, we're brainstorming how we're going to do this wraparound story. And I remember very distinctly being in the shower thinking about this, going, oh, we got to call Dan. Because Steve Christopher, one of the other guys in the film, is very good friends with Danny. So we got Danny on the phone and talked to him, and you know, he flew out to do the role, and his kids are out there, so he saw his kids while he was out there. And he is, when we were shooting that short film back in probably, I think it was 2008, it was something I'll never forget, because I had worked with sort of like local actors and aspiring actors and a lot of people who, you know, are sort of in the indie scene. But Dan was the first person I'd ever worked with who was like a professional actor, you know, where he's been doing this for decades and decades. And having him in the room on a project just automatically elevates everything as soon as he shows up. And the fact that we had worked with him previously, I had a lot of trust in him taking the material and sort of doing his own thing with it, making it his own to a certain extent, and just making everything a lot better. So sort of like the process for it was, he got the script, and then when he showed up, you know, we talked about doing things a little bit differently. He's a director himself. So he really helped Jasmine with those scenes as well, because she had to go to a really emotional place and sort of go to some difficult places as an actor. And he really helped her as well, elevate her game, I think. It was a tough day of shooting for her because she had that prosthetic contact in that was really uncomfortable. So he's great, very professional to work with, and really funny to be around. And, you know, like Sierra said earlier, I think just accidentally getting him involved in the film helped elevate it a lot, because it kind of it like adds to the lore of the story. It kind of expands the world. And, you know, we get asked about sequels a lot, mostly because of the ending of the movie and sort of his stuff at the end of the movie. So, yeah, we're really grateful that we were able to work it out with him and that he's involved in the movie.
Yeah. Well, and the movie's available video on demand, right? The fan reception seems to be really good from what I've seen online. Could we possibly see the movie, its exposure growing as more fans discover it? You know, more platforms, more avenues to see it, maybe possibly a physical media release down the road. What are we looking at possibly?
Do you guys want an exclusive?
Well, we always want an exclusive. Yeah.
We're going to be putting out a Blu-ray soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel pretty good saying that. We haven't, it's not quite a done deal yet, but we just had a really good meeting with someone who we had been talking with, and I'm pretty confident right now that we're going to be able to make it happen. So can't say 100% just yet, but if you are into physical media and you enjoyed the film, stay tuned, because hopefully we're going to be able to announce that pretty quick here.
Well, so there you go. There's your home for Sierra's basement footage.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Sounds like an extra.
Yeah. Little Easter egg, those girls.
There you go.
Yeah, no, we do. I'm you know, I have my whole collection back here. I'm a pretty big physical media guy, and we made sure that we shot a lot of behind the scenes, and we have a lot of cool, you know, behind the scenes content that we want to put on the Blu-ray. So if you're a fan of that sort of thing, hopefully we will not disappoint. We're going to try to pack the Blu-ray as much as we can with behind the scenes stuff and audio commentary and deleted scenes and, you know, all that good stuff. And maybe we'll get some ghost hunting as well.
That's fantastic. Well, Dave can tell you I'm a fiend for extra features. It's one of the things that I hate that we've lost with film now is that a lot of the streaming services, they don't give you the extras, you know?
Yeah.
I'll definitely be on the lookout for that. That's fantastic.
Appreciate it. Yeah. I mean, even like, you know, you go to the store sometimes and even some of the newer Blu-ray releases don't have anything on them. And it's like, sometimes I'll want to buy a movie, but if I see that there's nothing else on there, I'm like, I'm not going to do it. So I'm with you on that. I'm big on making sure that people get their money's worth. And so, you know, like I said, stay tuned. We're going to try to do something really cool with it.
Sweet. Well, we appreciate the exclusive, and yeah, you know, for people who are, you know, listening to this, watching this, keep an eye out for that, because you don't want to miss it, something like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But so we've talked a lot about Hunting with the Hag, you know, the production, the whole process, start to finish, the abilities, the acting. The big question, right? You talked about how the ending of Hunting for the Hag kind of leaves it open. Will there be a Hunting for the Hag 2? Is that something you've ever thought about?
We've definitely thought about it. What do you think, Sierra?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've thought about it, but it's not like anytime soon, unless somebody wants to like throw a bunch of money at us. we have a lot of other cool ideas that we want to do, just to kind of mix it up. But the great thing is the ending, you know, allows us to like come back and do something with it if we want to in the future. So, but I think there's a lot of cool opportunities that we could, like different directions we could go for a sequel. So, it would be fun, I think, just not right now.
Yeah. If you've seen the movie, you probably can figure this out, that if we were to do a sequel, I think that the budget for part two would have to be increased fairly substantially, and so it would be a matter of trying to make that happen. And you know, there's just sort of some logistics like that where we're pretty sure that we're going to go do something totally different next, and then if a little ways down the line people want it enough and we feel like we have the ability to do it, we're certainly not ruling it out. But you know, don't expect it in 6 months or anything.
Well, you've both mentioned, you know, other ideas, other projects. Is there anything in the works or that maybe you could give us a little bit of information on that you have an idea of what's coming next?
We're really just kind of in the very, you know, baby step process of figuring that out right now. Like I said, me
Okay.
and Sierra are actually writing on Sunday. But I'm hoping that people will check out Ghost Girls. Like we said, the first episode of that is on Tubi. And we have two new episodes that will be available probably on Tubi as well pretty soon. Sierra and I did a short film during COVID. Jasmine is in that as well. You can check that. I can't remember where I have that posted. I know that we're going to put it. I think it's on our B Movie Mania YouTube. I'll send you guys a link if you're interested. But I would say mostly Ghost Girls right now, and stay tuned. I wish I could say more, but I don't want to say
That's okay.
something and then and jinx it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, like you said, don't want to jinx it. And, you know, Dave and I are both patient people, so we will be eagerly but patiently waiting for your next product. Don't worry.
Appreciate it.
But, all right. Well, folks, as we wrap this up, you know, the movie is Hunting for the Hag. So for those of you who are, you know, listening, it's on video on demand. Make sure you check it. It is excellent. Highly recommended by us. Definitely, you know, give this some love because, you know, this is a definitely a work, a love, you know, a pa work of passion, and we want to see more stuff from you guys. So, Paul and Sierra, how can fans follow you on social media to get updates on future projects and just, you know, see how you guys are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. We're mostly on Instagram right now. So the handle is at Into the Night MP, stands for Into the Night Motion Pictures. You can follow us. We post frequently. We have updates not only on Hunting for the Hag, but Ghost Girls as well. And as we get more into this next project, I'm sure we're going to start sharing some of the pre-production stuff as well, because I think that'd be fun to see. So yeah, definitely check it out.
Sounds good. Well, we appreciate you guys joining us. Keep us posted as things develop. Make sure, you know, we don't miss anything because we want to help spread the word, help plug what you guys are doing. Because, like I said, we really loved your movie, and we don't do a whole lot of interviews, right? We just it's got to be movies that strike us, and your guys is dead. So that's why we wanted to reach out and talk to you guys. And it's been a
Thank you.
pleasure. And as you do future projects, you know, we could revisit and maybe talk again and plug some of those. So,
Yeah, definitely. And listen, we really appreciate you guys taking the time to review the film. I really enjoyed everything that you guys had to say about that and about the exorcism. And you know, definitely if I've been promoting it to some of my friends and whatnot, so hopefully we can send some more interesting movies your guys' way, and you know, keep
sounds
doing
good.
your thing.
Sounds good. Sounds good. We love to support indie filmmakers and projects like this because these are the movies that you could, I don't know, you could just, like Isaac said, you get their passion projects and you could tell it makes all the difference. And
Right.
in our review, I mean, I point blank said that, hey, if I we reviewed The Exorcism in your movie, and if I was gonna pick one to watch, it was gonna be your movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was a better film. So
That.
yeah, there you go. So
Thank you.
yeah, thanks
yep.
you guys. Really appreciate you guys
Yep.
having us on,
Yep.
and we're happy to help promote your guys' podcast as well. So
Well, I
definitely
appreciate
keep
that.
up
So,
there.
well, we appreciate it, guys, and thank you for your time. I know it's hard to schedule because we're three time zones here covering, but we appreciate you guys working with us and finding time that we could all get together. So, but we'll stay in touch, and we'll touch base down the road, and I'm sure we'll do something again in the future.
Sounds good.
All
Thank
right.
you, guys.
Well, you guys
Thank you.
have a great weekend.
All
You
right,
too.
you too.
All right, until our next normal episode, we'll be coming up on Thursday when we review Maxine, which is in theaters now. Ike, anything you want to throw in there before we wrap this up? Is another fun interview. Those guys are great. And I love supporting these guys and these indie filmmakers I talk to. It's such a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the only thing I want to add is that, you know, obviously I love these interviews, and this has probably been one of the best interviews. We've only done a handful, but getting to talk to Paul and Sierra, you know, getting to see the different creative process and everything else. So I really love this interview. You know, Paul and Sierra, if you guys happen to be listening to or watching this, thank you guys again so much for, you know, giving us the time and everything else. You guys are fantastic, very lovely people. So hope to see more stuff out of you soon, and maybe chat again one day.
Absolutely. And if you haven't seen it yet, go watch Hunting for the Hag. You heard them. They need some money to do that sequel. So if everybody can go out and purchase it on video on demand, and then when if the physical copy does come out, just go out and buy them, and just buy copies for all your friends. I don't care if they like movies or not. Just buy them. Tell me, hey, watch this movie, and let's support them. And so that we can get lots more great projects from them in the future. So again, until our upcoming episode where we review Maxine, wherever you go, whatever you do, be good, be safe, and have many pleasant nightmares.